Yeah, 100%. Fuse, who's, before we move to hockey, Fuse, I want to know who's disappointed you in the playoffs so far?
Man, there's, let's see. I mean, like I said, the Sixers, we've been over a little bit, but that, even the way they went out wasn't as much. Again, it's just collective. Milwaukee, we talked about, injury made it a little more interesting, but just that whole season was disappointing. So I don't want to really keep beating the drum there. In terms of the other teams that are out, I mean, I don't know, like the Lakers, everyone's about the Lakers is all disappointed and stuff, but it's like, listen, Denver smoked them for two straight years now. Like that really shouldn't have been a surprise to everybody. Like we've kind of seen that movie before.
And you know what? I thought the Lakers stood their fucking ground. They were winning a majority of those games.
Yeah,
they looked better than they did. I know nobody wants to hear that if you're the Lakers, but they did. They competed a little bit there. I think the two that probably stand out where you're like, hey, what happens now is the Clippers, just because it's been years of frustration now. Like you got to worry about Kawhi's availability every single year. You mortgaged your entire future to get Kawhi and Paul George, which at the time, 100% the correct decision. I am not trying to write revisionist history here, and I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. But the way it's worked out, like you got another first-round exit, like a first-round exit the year before. You've had one basically healthy one run with Kawhi. You've got Russ that's not really working. Harden, when he needs to be a major focal point of the offense, like we know what it is at this point. So, yeah, I think when you look there, you just feel kind of stuck with this roster. And the other one, too, in that sense is Phoenix. Like, if you're Phoenix, you have all this money tied up in Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. You know, Nurkic just got a big contract, but largely you don't really have any other depth. Like all your depth is two-way guys and vet minimum guys really beyond that. You don't have the money or the picks to go out and fix it. And again, you just got swept by Minnesota in the first round. It's not like, oh, you lost in seven games. It was competitive. Like, no, you completely got your lunch money taken. And that's a series that they dominated in the regular season. Like Phoenix actually played Minnesota really well in the regular season. I kind of thought they were going to give the Timberwolves fits a little bit, and they just didn't at all. Like it was completely non-competitive. I don't know how you fix that roster without trading one of Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, or Devin Booker. It's not going to be Beal, though, because Beal Beal is the worst of those three players, and he's due a ton of money still. Like, that Wizards contract, he got an all-time contract from the Wizards. Good for Brad. He's making a ton of money, but
Are you going to say the no-trade clause, too?
Yeah, the no-trade clause. It's a legendary good contract for Brad Beal, but they're stuck with it. Like, they are really, I don't know what you do there. I don't know who's moving heaven and earth to get Bradley Beal in 2024. I still think KD has a market. Obviously, like, Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. He's one of the best scorers of all time. I think you move, you know, but knowing that he's 36 years old now, that he's dealt with injuries of his own, you know, you for sure, you're not moving four first round picks, even the way that Phoenix moved to get him. Like there is a little more tread on those tires at this point. You can still restock the war chest a little bit. Like it's Kevin Durant. The only way to truly do is to trade Devin Booker. If you're Phoenix, are you really trading Devin Booker? Like, are you going to blow this thing up? Like, if you're trading Devin Booker, you might as well trade everybody. Trade KD at that point. Why? Try to move Bradley Beal. Because there's no point. You're not going to be competitive. Like, if Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal in depth are probably not going to win you a title in 2024, in my opinion. No, if you're moving Book, like...
Just swap them out. Like, you know, pull a Bucks, pull a Celtics, like swap them out with like another guy. Like, cause here's the thing about Devin Booker. It's like, he has the capability to like score 50, but oftentimes he scores like 19, 21. He's not engaged on the defensive end. He's also not a leader. He's not a vocal leader. He's not a leader on the floor.
Well, Big Van, I agree with that, but I think also it's the first year with the super team. And also, they had like an awful coach. Like, I think being a super team in the NBA, I don't think you can just like Frankenstein it. Like, you can't. What's so funny?
We are not going to slander Frank Vogel and call this team a super team. We got to stop throwing super team around. I know they have names that make us think they're a super team. There is nothing super about this team all year. They were extremely.
The Suns are a super team.
LeBron and Wade and Bosh were a super team. The Warriors with KD and Steph and Clay and Dre were a super team. This team won 46 games in the regular season. We are not giving them super team credit. And we are not going to fry my man Frank Vogel. Vince is not going to get on this podcast and talk about GMs and how important GMs are. And then we're going to fire Frank Vogel. Suns are paying basically guys that are straight out of the G League and depth wise. I don't blame Frank for that. Like, I don't think Frank Vogel is some, like, you know, Eric Spoelstra basketball savant either, but I certainly don't blame him for this roster being poorly constructed. Like, I think he got what he could out of them. It didn't work. The Wolves also just have the personnel. I mean, they were all, I mean, Book's stock is low off that playoff series. The Wolves have the perfect matchup to surround Book. Like, they just said, hey, we're not going to let Book score, let everybody else beat us. That's good strategy.
The thing about Devin, he's also hurt all the time, too. Sure, I know you got something to say, yeah, but I just had to say, like, he's also hurt a lot, too.
Well, I mean, just to kind of close the loop on this, so, like, we don't have to agree that it's a super team, but I will say that I think they attempted to make a super team, right?
Like, I know, absolutely. I will give you, yeah, absolutely.
They attempted. And I think, not to switch sports, I don't want to go into baseball, but, like, I feel like looking at the Orioles, Big Van, I know you and I have been following them, like, they've been doing things the right way of, like, we're not going to go out and get a bunch of big names. We're going to grow from underneath. Like, you got Mountcastle, you got Santander, you got fucking Gunnar Henderson. Like, these are all, like, these aren't, like, fucking Juan Soto's and you know, Aaron Judge's out there. Like, they're doing it the right way. I feel like in the NBA, I can't think of many teams, you guys got to help me with that, that have kind of, like, grown it on their own. I guess you can say that the Warriors have. The Warriors have, right?
Yeah, Warriors. Yeah,
Warriors, OKC.
Yeah.
I would argue this Minnesota team largely has. Yeah, like, you traded for Rudy, like, Cat's home grown, yeah. McDonald's so is home grown.
There's a lot of value in that, bro. Like, you played, like, I mean, the Sixers should have been like that. I don't know what happened, but
they were, and they the best Sixers teams, and now with Embiid and Maxey, they are. I completely agree. Like, you're absolutely right about homegrown, build it right, reward your guys. Like, that's the whole point of what the process was supposed to be, right? Like, I think good franchises do. Like, you go out and you make free agent sign, and sometimes it works. Like, look, if you have the opportunity to put Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and LeBron James in their prime together, you go out and you do it. Like, there are extremely rare situations where that works. But I've always been a big proponent of, I think you win with two guys in depth. I think big threes can work. Like, they have worked over time. But the best squads, when you look at history, like, if you're going to get a big three, it better be so far ahead of everyone else, because you are. Like, more often than not, you're not winning around the margins. Like, those Heat teams had a bunch of great savvy vets that helped them out. The Ray Allens, the Shane Battiers, the Mike Millers of the world. But yeah, that's a rare situation. Like, there aren't many LeBron Jameses out there, put it that way, like, where I'm just mortgaging everything. I think it's, and even if you want to bring it to LeBron James, look at the Lakers team since his tenure there. When did they win? They won with Anthony Davis, LeBron, and depth. When they went out and started third star hunting, when they whiffed on Kawhi and then said, we're going after Russ, like, when they let Caruso walk and traded Kuzma and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like, that's when it started to go left. And that's why they've really been kind of hamstrung here and haven't been able to repeat. Like, depth is so undersold in the NBA because it is such an, you know, it's the sport where the individual star can make the biggest impact. Like, you can truly win a game with one person sometimes. LeBron James has done it for years. But, you know, more often than not, like, we're starting to see, we talked about this off mic, but, like, I wonder if you start to see the NBA team building model shift, because it kind of has. Like, the NBA, which has been a traditionally dynastic sport, you know, you talk about the Warriors, you talk about the Bulls in the 90s, like the Spurs and the Kobe Lakers and all that stuff. These past 6 years, it's all been different titles. Like, the Raptors in 2019, the Lakers, the Bucks, the Nuggets, the Warriors. Like, and I know the Warriors are in 2022, but even still, it's kind of a different version of that team with Jordan Poole. You know, It does seem like teams are maximizing their window, kind of going for it more the way that it happens in the NFL. You know, NFL teams, you see guys going all the time. Like, you got that one window, you go for it. Like, because you may not get back. Like, that's why it's so essential to go in when you can. And with NBA, maybe there's more patience. And there always should be. Like, I'm at, you know, youth is where guys win. You win around the margins. And I think teams are starting to figure it out, and not to bring it back home, but that's why Daryl Morey's got to nail this freaking offseason. Mm-hmm. Like, win around the margins. That's how you win in the NBA. If you've got your stars, once you have your stars, you can figure the rest out.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. That's a great point about that comparison between NBA and NFL. I gotta think about that more. I don't have an immediate thought, but that's actually really interesting.
I'm boiling on it too. Like, obviously, this is a real recency bias over the past few years. You know, who knows? Maybe Ant is Michael Jordan, and the Timberwolves just rattle off four titles in the next few years, and I'm just laughing.
That'd be so sick.
It's just been changing. Like,
oh my god, I would love to like drop like. Just like 50 units on a T-Wolves like finals, like minus 1200, and just be like, I know it's a lock. Like, that'd be so sick. I would love that.
But you know, I'm a nerd for history stuff. Like, if Minnesota wins, you want to talk about it, because Minnesota has four teams, right? Like, they have all four of the major sports.
Yeah, they do.
That's they crazy. Haven't won anything, bro. Like, the Wild are relatively new since the North Stars have left, but like, the Wild have never won. The Timberwolves have never won. The Vikings have never won and have obviously lost multiple spectacular fashions. The Twins have won. The Twins have two World Series, but like one was in the late 80s. I want to say it was like 87 maybe. And then they won in like 90 or 91. It was one of those years with Kirby Puckett. But like, that's it. It's been since like, you know, we're 33 years old. Like, it's our entire lifetime since any Minnesota teams have won. Like, we've had it pretty rough with Philly over the years, but like, man, I at least have the Birds to fall back on in 2017 and the Phillies to fall back on in 2008. Like,
I want to talk.
Kind of does put it in perspective.
Speaking about like Philly teams, I want to get your take on the Philly team that I think gets like the least amount of love, and that's the Flyers. Like, what are your general thoughts about the Flyers? What's next for y'all? Y'all got the big Russian kid in net. I know Torts is a divisive, kind of topic. You know, pretty polarizing guy. I'm pro Torts, but.
Pro Torts as well, for the record.
For the record, we're a pro Torts podcast.
We're anti Torts podcast now, baby. me and the booth.
But like what's up with the Flyers? Is TK the truth? Are you glad that you passed up on Johnny Gaudreau and went defensive? What are your general thoughts? Carter Hart, scumbag. Like, what were you thinking?
That was crazy, bro. I mean, we can get into that in a sec, but like Carter Hart being a scumbag really derailed things because, I mean, it's so classic Flyers because like the story of the Flyers over the years is that they can never find a goalie. And like this season, they had such a good tandem with Hart and with Ersson. Like, and Sam Ersson was great all year long. He deserved a lot of credit. At the end of the year, he just ran out of gas. Like, my man wasn't supposed to be a starter. He ended up basically having to start every game. Yeah. Like, they got Fedotov over late. But again, like, we're talking with what, four games left in the regular season? Like, this is a dude who earlier this year got kidnapped to go potentially fight in Ukraine. Like, I think it's going to take some time to adjust to the American game here a little bit. And so that, you know, really, obviously that hurt big time. You know, it's crazy. Like, the Flyers, when you look at their history and love, like, there's always been a ton for the Flyers historically in Philly. And even with my lifetime, like, up until 2012, I would say, they're pretty consistently good. Like, they haven't won the Cup since 75, which is pretty brutal, but like, they've had multiple Cup runs. They were always in the playoffs year in and year out. And they've even had a few runs since then, but it just felt like they just did things wrong up until the point where like, and then when Chuck Fletcher took over, it really went south. They were like actively the worst front office and that's when the national media caught on and kind of this rebuild started, right? Like, the Flyers just hadn't got embarrassed enough for people to realize, like, yo, this franchise was rotten from the inside out. Like, you keep painting orange and black and Broad Street Bullies on everything, but it's like, yo, they haven't won anything meaningful. They're not competitive. They don't build serious rosters. And so I'm hoping they're turning that around now. Like, I'm torn, man, because, like, I really love what they did this season in terms of the young guys developing, right? And I do think them playing meaningful hockey is important. Like, I do think, you know, those guys getting that experience, the Cam Yorks, the, you know, Konechny obviously balled out. I think he's great. In terms of a top end guy, I think there's a ceiling on it, but he for sure is like a top six guy. Like, he was peak what I thought he could be this year. I was extremely satisfied with his season. Other young guys, you know, showed signs of developments, you know, the Morgan Frost, the Joel Farabees, the, you know, those guys of the world, like, you are happy about that. And the fact that a team that really nobody expected anything of last year pretty much fought until the last day of the regular season, like, there is something to be commended about that. Like, that builds character. the other part of me is like, I don't care about character. I want high-end talent right now. And the best teams in hockey have high-end talent. We don't have – like, Michkov, I think, is a guy, and that will help a lot. But it's like, yo, the Cutter-Gauthier situation is a disaster right now. It doesn't matter how that pans out. Like, regardless, that's a number five overall pick who's not joining your roster. Like, TK is a guy, but, like, we don't have those top-end guys. And I think our front office still knows that. So there's a part of me that's like, yo – Torts kind of pissed some of our guys off this year because that's what he does. He pushes, but like sometimes it implodes. And if we had made the playoffs, cool, I would have said, hey, that's a success. Like you really overachieved. Making that playoffs is worth it. But when you kind of like, you know, spiral and blow up in the last month of the season, I don't know. Like I have a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth about it. Like I'm not fully anti-Torts, but like I've just seen the movie with Torts before. Like it's been I saw how this played out in Columbus. I saw how this played out at the end of Tampa. I saw how this played out in his Rangers tenure. Like, why are we expecting this to be different? Like Torts is already Torts is benching our captain in the middle of the season. Like, what are we talking about? Like
he wasn't playing, bro. He was
on the fourth line. Like he's playing with Garnet Hathaway and Nick DeSaulniers, and we're wondering why he's not producing. Like it's just unserious behavior. Like I'm sorry. Like, that thing with Torts is like Torts is gonna piss somebody off at some point, and I'm just like waiting for it to happen. I've seen this movie before, and that's where my skepticism comes from.
I don't know, man. I think you're a little tough on Torts, bro. I think like
like I don't want to downplay that. Like Torts did a good job this year, and some guys improved, and he deserves credit for that. Because that team, I had zero expectations for this team going into the season. Like I thought they were going to be not the worst team in hockey, but I just did not expect them to be, like I said, battle until the end of the season the way they did. I do got to tip my cap to the guys in that locker room.
I mean, what about the man coaching the guys in the locker room, man? Like, come on. Like, I think you and a lot of other, like, Flyers fans have this weird thing where, like, when the Flyers are good, they're like, man, this team is so good. I love the players. I love this locker room. You just skirt the coach. Then when they're unraveling and they're making bonehead plays and they're taking stupid penalties and the captain isn't performing and he's not leading the team, then you guys are like, Torts lost the locker room. Torts is building a negative culture. Torts. Like, come on.
We hire bad coaches, bro. That's part of the problem. Is like, we haven't had good coach. Like, Laviolette was probably our last good coach. Like, Dave Hakstol is kind of like, we just saw him flame out in Seattle again. Alan Vigneault, same deal. Like, he's another coach that just kind of the book has been written on before. Like, a good coach, but like, we've seen that movie. We saw it with the Rangers. We saw it with Canucks. Like, I would love for the Flyers. Like, they had Berube for a little bit. I would like to bring Berube back potentially if he's available. Or just go with somebody younger. Like, I just want somebody. Like, I liked at least with Hakstol, they tried something different. It didn't work out, but I at least respected, like, the change in approach. That's just what I'm hoping, like, eventually happens. And for what it's worth, like, I also think Torts is probably, like, he says otherwise. I think Torts is coaching for 2 or 3 more years. Like, I think he transitions into front office sooner than later. He's already starting to do a little bit of front office stuff.
Yeah, sure. What you got for this, man?
I'm looking up who the fuck Berube is.
He was our coach for a little bit. He was our interim, and then he ended up going to Blues. He was the Blues coach, and they won the Cup a few years.
He won the Cup with the Blues. All right.
Yeah.
Pat Maroon was on that team. I'll keep.
Who was?
Pat Maroon. Yeah, Patty.
Oh, shit. Okay. What do I think about all that? I feel like Fuse he's giving some residual blame on Torts for the Cutter situation.
Like, I saw Panthers 4-1. I didn't realize they were winning that.
Oh, yeah. And you know we're on that. You know we're on that money line, boy.
We're back with that a little bit. That's usually. Yeah. I feel like
Fuse is blaming Torts for the Cutter situation. Am I off or on with that one?
No, I am blaming him a little bit because I think it's a big reason you want to come here. I think Torts has rubbed people the wrong way. This is a known fact.
Okay, like,
there are
all
people that hate Tortorella.
Bro, so
and they're not all scrubs.
Man, so it's not the Philly fan culture. Like it wasn't WIP. Like I wouldn't want to come to play for y'all just for them. Like
cancer, but they push Cutter Gauthier away. WIP was also WIP tried to run AJ Brown out of town for like 4 straight weeks. We don't really know all the nonsense that they do over there. But like I don't think half of WIP can name who Cutter Gauthier is. I don't think they learned who he was. So spurned the I don't know if they brought out the peak Philly hate just because everybody had somebody to unify, but I think most Philly fans will tell you they didn't know who Connor Gauthier was.
You know what? Dude, you know what the WIP take was during the NFL season about Jalen Hurts? They were saying he's damaged goods like Cam Newton. They're saying he's Cam Newton, bro, because he got hit too much. He lost a step already, and it's time to move on.
Too much. We were the best offensive lines of football. What are you talking about?
Joe DeCamry was saying that like for months, bro, like straight up. The 6 a.m. show.
You're more tapped in on that than I am. I'm not trying to trade Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts got to stop throwing interceptions next year, but like, what are we talking about? Like, we just made the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Like, what are we doing?
Man, y'all was about to fire your coach, too, straight up off this Super
Bowl. I was there a little bit. I kind of was more there. And that really was saying something because I like Nick, and I've always been a Nick defender. That meltdown this year, like, Vince, it's not just that they were bad at the end of the regular season. They wouldn't have beat anybody in the end of the NFL at the regular season. Like, the only team that I think that might have been able to outbeat at that point is Carolina. Carolina was the worst team I've ever
Carolina
seen.
Carolina was dog shit.
We were horrible. I watched with my own two eyes the Arizona Cardinals put 522 yards of offense on us and not punt for the single game. Like, you know how ridiculous that is when you're playing for home field advantage. Like, that meltdown was an all-time spectacular failure. And when it's all-time and historic like that, that's when I think you have to start to look at more drastic things. Like, if they lost three games in a row to end the season, that sucks. But like, I'm not gonna fire a guy who just made the Super Bowl the year before. Like, I think I'm fine with him coming back. Like, I'm not gonna like totally be, you know, I wasn't that locked into firing Nick. But yeah, they got to get this year right. Like, if they underachieve and they start out like, you know, 1-4 or something like that, I would expect the plug to get pulled sooner than later.
Here's what I want to say. They started 10-1 and ended 1-7. Am I right about that?
At least 1-7, 1-6, crazy. Something like that. Yeah, that's, it was
close. Now, fuck what happened last year. Fuck Sirianni taking the Super Bowl. Bro, you want to talk about torts and that team falling apart? A team that shouldn't have even been there? Why does Sirianni get that pass, bro? He should have been out. I cannot stand Philly fans who did not want Bill Belichick. That makes sense to me. Sense to me.
What has Bill won since Tom left? And I was a big Bill.
Mac Jones, bro. Give me a break. You can't run a McDonald's with Mac Jones. Damn. Dude, you can't run a drive-thru window with Mac Jones. You want him to lead a Super Bowl team?
Mac Jones stinks. I'm not going
to defend him. Cam? The guy spitting the sign on the side of the road? That's Cam Newton? Give me a break, bro. Cam Newton.
Cam Newton, before he signed, just smoked 12 boxes of cigars, bro. You can't say Cam Newton. That's nuts, bro.
They had one good year together.
A good year? That year was turmoil as hell. They backdoored it in the playoffs. Like, what were we talking about? Like, oh yeah, it was a real good year. Thanks for getting bounced in wild card. Like, what?
Then why do we want Bill? That's my point. Bill needed Tom. Right.
Bill, there's no one in the league more established than Bill Belichick.
Tom won the Super Bowl the first year without Bill. It was
You're a tomboy? That's crazy.
Of course I am. That's wild. The first year without Bill. What are we talking about? How could you not be after that?
Wait, so all right, hang on. So you saying Belichick don't got nothing to do with the success of Tom Brady? I was going to say, like, come on.
Bill's one of the best coaches of all time. Like, I'm not trying to slander Bill at all. I'm saying, though, Bill right now in 2024, I'm saying I think that era has passed him.
I think Bill Belichick, the coach, is fire. Just don't let him be the GM. Don't let him draft like three punters and two linemen for your draft and be like, well, yeah, you know, we're just gonna compete. Like, nah, like have him do the X's and O's and like running the sidelines, but you don't care about the draft, buddy. You don't care about free agency. That's my job. That's what I'm doing. Like, that's for Howie and the boys. Like, that's not for you, but you could coach the team. I think Bill is a very viable coach, just not a coach GM.
Okay, I can concede that a little bit. If you have him strictly coaching and you're not doing the GM stuff as much a little bit, and he's willing to be in that situation, like, I still think Bill Belichick coach defense, obviously. Like, he's been one of the most brilliant defensive minds of all time outside of Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl. Appreciate you, Bill. Thanks for that.
that was crazy. I don't know what Bill was smoking on that.
That was wild, bro. That was a chink in the legacy moment right there. The Bill.
That was crazy. Yeah.
I appreciate it. I was firmly in the Bill is more important than Tom camp low-key until Tom went down to Tampa and won that bowl. Tom going down to Tampa and winning that bowl the first year, and I know that Tampa team was ready to win, but because they were like, they were always floating around that 500 mark. Like, all the talent was there. Obviously, great receivers. They had a great defense. But, like, yo, Tom doing it in the first year, like, and that's how you know Tom Brady is an absolute psycho, because that was the 1% of his legacy people would hold against him and say, oh, well, he never did it anywhere other than New England. He had Bill, he had this, he had that. That man went down and shut that down one time. You have, in the first season, you have to give it up at that point. Like, that to me is like, Tom was already the GOAT no matter what. Tom's past everybody. Like, Joe Montana's chilling right there around two, and like, there's a few other quarterbacks right there, but like, it's like, basketball to me doesn't. I lean MJ, but like, you, that GOAT debate isn't unanimous. Like, LeBron, you can make a pretty compelling debate for. Hockey has one with Gretzky, and hockey's had that for a bit. Football hasn't had that, but they did when Brady. Now,
I kind of say something about Gretzky. I don't know if this is, and I'm not standing behind this, so I'm not putting this out. But I've been seeing this take lately, where it's like, look at the goalies that Gretzky was going up against. It's kind of my argument where I'm like, yo, I ain't giving no love to like Wilt and like, not no love, but I'm like, you guys, the Wilts, that era. I can't even think of another guy like that. Big O, like those guys. You guys are going up against like electricians and like just like these guys who like wouldn't be able to make the Villanova team. And like, yes, you did some great shit and you like got basketball jumping. So like, you guys can fill out like 15 to 20, but like, you are nowhere near top 15 to me with like where the league's history is gone. Like, I'm not giving it up for that. And so I've seen that kind of similar take about like the goalies that like Gretzky like went up against. And I don't know. Do you think that's valid? Not valid? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm not going to rehash your NBA take because y'all ranked the guys last week, and so we don't got to fully get into that because we know the podcast listeners don't need to hear that again. In terms of Gretzky, I'll say it's a little different because I think Gretzky played in the 80s and the 90s. Like, if he was playing in the 60s, sure. Like, goalies weren't even wearing face masks fully in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Like, guys, the Flyers won a Stanley Cup with most of the guys not wearing helmets. Like, that's insane. In a way, though, I wouldn't look at the goalies as much. Like, the goaltenders are for sure better now. Like, there's nobody like, you know, Vasilevsky, for example, is just such a large human being. Like, that's part of the reason. Like, he's one of the best goalies ever. He also just is physically bigger than a lot of these guys have been in the past. So, like, athletic, that definitely factors too. In. But to me, it's more about the flow of the offense. Like, the 80s rules were just tailor-made for offense. And so guys would put up, like, these, you know, 100-point seasons without even blinking. So in a way, like, the rules have shifted a little bit, but I don't really fault Gretzky for that, bro. Like, Gretzky, that stat where if you drop all Gretzky's goals that he still has more points than everybody else, like, it's just when it's so inflated to that extent, and he won it multiple times. Like, he's got championships, so it's not like you can say it's all stat padding. Like, he was playing well into the 90s. Like, his last season was 97 or something like that. So I don't know. Again, like, because that's always my,
he took the Kings to the finals too, didn't he?
Yeah. And so, like, it's always his Rangers teams are competitive even late. Like, they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals or something. They lost the Flyers his last year in the Eastern Conference Finals when the Flyers got swept by the Red Wings then in 97. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, it is tough with the 60s and 70s guys, like, because that's always in my top 10 questions, because you're right. The guys that stand out from that era, like, so for basketball, it's Bill and Wilt and Oscar Robertson. I'm not ranking Bob Cousy, and respect to all those guys. I'm not ranking them in even remotely in that tier. But it is hard for me where it's like, at some point where it's like, yo, those guys dominated their era. I know that they played up against plumbers, but like, how can I fault them for that? Like, what are you going to do? Like, put him in a modern NBA program. Like, I think Bill Russell translates if you put him in modern NBA training. I think Will translates. Like, I think, you know, who knows how good they would have been. And then in the 60s and 70s, it's tougher. Like, 80s on, like with Magic and Bird, for example, I don't really have as much of a problem putting them there with the top guys. Like, I think, like, Magic and Bird are both firmly in my top 10. And everything on, obviously, like, you know, 90s, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, people are trying to air or shame the 90s. And it's like, yo, I know there are minor differences, but it's like, yo, MJ is cooking in the 90s. or and in the 2000s, vice versa with LeBron. Like LeBron is cooking in the 90s and obviously in the 2000s as well.
Let me ask you this, devil's advocate here. Who went up against better competition, Jordan or LeBron?
Oh, what a good one.
Oh, that, oh man. So I think LeBron, from an individual finals perspective, has probably the single greatest win out of all of them. Like being that 73 Warriors team when they were down 3-1 is just some alien, unprecedented. Like that's what put LeBron in that conversation with me. And when you add the pressure of the fact that Cleveland hadn't won in 52 years, like as a city, like breaking that, being from Ohio, like the added just weight that gets put on it naturally, like that to me is the best individual win. When you look at their opponents, though, it does start to get tough because it's like, yo, MJ beat Malone and Stockton twice. So like those Jazz teams were good enough to go back. Barkley's Phoenix team was really good that they beat that year in the finals in 93.
Yeah. Did he win the MVP that year?
Yeah. Barkley won MVP. Barkley, yeah.
Right, yeah.
They got through, like he got through the Magic's Lakers and Celtics and the Pacers and the Pistons and won multiple titles on the way there. So like, I don't like MJ's competition was pretty good overall. LeBron's finals competition though has always been pretty good too. I mean, you know, the Spurs in 07 were in the peak of their dynasty. Even that 13-14 Spurs team, like they made two straight finals in a pretty loaded Western Conference.
LeBron should have won that though, bro. He really needed that three-peat, at least for me. Like that.
The 2011 one is when it comes down, and we really don't need to do this whole debate tonight.
No, we're not.
The biggest knock against LeBron finals wise, loss that is inexplicable, is the 2011 one of the Mavericks. He was horrible in that series in game 5 and game 6. Like, I remember Sherman and I watched this at RIP Champs. I remember vividly watching this and, like, bro, he scored 8 points in the clincher. Like, that's LeBron James at the peak of his powers. Like that was that was the first time where I was like, yo, maybe this guy isn't going to win a title. And it's probably the only time I've said that where it was like, you can't have gotten a better scenario than that. And obviously shut that up last year, and good for Bron. Like LeBron spent that summer locked in with Hakeem, learning how to play in the post.
Yeah.
Look how that worked. Like crazy. You win two straight titles then. I don't know. MJ's got more first round losses. MJ also never lost in the finals. Like that matters a lot. LeBron lost a bunch in the finals, but like probably three of them at least, I don't blame him for remotely. Like those two losses, the Warriors or KD, and that loss of Spurs in 07, he got beat by teams that were just significantly better in every facet. Like there was no way around it. And he played well in those games. Like, you know, I don't know, but that Cleveland one in 2016 though, that was
ridiculous, dude. That was insane. Like, that was
go back to if you're LeBron is the GOAT fan that you look at.
Man, me and Big Van were in the Bay Area during that time, and it was so amazing seeing everybody just.
That was crazy. we were rooting for the Cavs too. It was amazing.
73 games. They were going to be the greatest team of all time if they won that finals. Like bar none, they would have run the gauntlet. They'd have had back to back chips. And honestly, who knows how it plays out? Because I don't know if KD goes there if they win that title. Like I think they just have to run it back by proxy almost. But yeah, it was, I mean, that's one of the, but just, yeah, being down 3-1 and like him, Kyrie, Kevin Love, like the special hoops, that's one of the best series of basketball I've ever seen.
Yep. Agreed. Could I throw one more topic at you guys before we wrap up?
Absolutely.
Yeah, hit me.
I want to switch gears completely, man. I want to talk about Drake and Kendrick Lamar. I want to talk about that because I know we were talking about that before we got on air and I thought there was some really good conversation. As far as I don't know, I mean, we can start with I'll say this: I don't think rap beef is what it used to be. Where if you lose a rap beef, then your career is over. So, like, I think at the end of the day, this is a win-win for both parties. Well, depending on certain facts and details and allegations and whatever. I mean, we can go into all that, but I think from my point of view, I'm giving Kendrick round one, two, whatever. I'm giving him the overall lead right now over Drake for a couple reasons. I think Drake is always going to be the better song maker. And even in his diss songs, there were better songs. But I think if we're talking about straight, depending on how you grade it and how you judge it, if you're talking diss tracks, I got to give it to Kendrick. And I feel like the way Drake responded to some of these allegations didn't do him any favors. I think I didn't do it. To me, that doesn't cut it. To me, taking all the Twitter rumors of, oh, we fed you false information, bro. I read that on Twitter 3 days before you dropped the song, like from a bunch of Twitter bots. Like, to me, that didn't land with me. But we should all examine our bias. And I know I'm firmly more so against Drake in general with anything he's doing in life. Even his bets, I fade them. Mm-hmm. Whenever he posted on that sports book, I'm like, yo, Drake's got them. I'm taking the other side. And often that wins. He's kind of like Trent in that way, but like with a lot less class, right? So that's where I'm at with Drake, bro. I want to open it up. Big Van, I want to hear what you have to say about the beef so far, because I know we've all been talking about it, and it's a pretty hot topic.
Yeah, I think that Kendrick wins. I don't think that's like a landslide, though. I think I think Kendrick gets like some lore points, right? With just like his Like That verse, like that just kind of like kicked everything off. And I think that's like when we look back at that, we're going to be like, damn, that verse, like that feature on that album at that time was what a crazy like canon to light to like really kind of get.
Could you go into that for, cause for me, I'm a little ignorant to
yeah, lore so behind that. I think like, so basically Future Metro, they drop an album together. And Kendrick's on one of the songs, and on the songs, like Kendrick is just like firing off. Like first thing I noticed was that he was actually like rapping hard. Like he wasn't on like, hey, I'm trying to like make a point with this verse, or like this whole verse is actually a scheme, or like this, I'm leaving breadcrumbs. He was just rapping, which like for people like me, where like I do appreciate like people who can get into that space of like artistry and like make artistic music and like pieces of art, I do respect that. But I feel like when it comes to rap, you got to rap, or you got to rap hard. Like, and there's another thing too with like rap, which is one reason why I'm a little biased against Drake, is that like rap is cool. Like, you can't be corny. You can't be whack. You can't be weak. Like, you can't be, like, cringy. And Drake has a lot of those kind of things going on for me. And so, anyway, Kendrick pops off, said there ain't no big three. It's just big him, big me, right? And so he does that. Next thing you know, Drake. And then everybody just starts swinging on Drake. It was like, oh, wow, like, Kendrick did this, so I'm just going to start swinging on Drake. I thought that part was kind of weird and corny on other people. But anyway, Drake drops Push Ups, great track, really funny. Said that Kendrick was short, he had a size 7 shoe. Top dogs in the pockets. It was really funny. Like, I heard that, and I was like, damn, Drake's funny as hell. Like, that's how he really, this is crazy. He went to a lunch table and was like, first off, you little short ass nigga, man, I'm tired of you. Like, it was awesome. Like, so that was cool, and I was like, oh shit, what's gonna happen? And then Kendrick dropped Euphoria. And like at this point, I'm like, whoa, Drake's dead. like he popped off. Like he really broke him down in Euphoria in like two different beats. He did all artsy and everything. And I was like, wow, Kendrick really like beat his ass with like his style. That was kind of clean. But then Drake had like, and this is where Kendrick like pulled ahead for me, is this moment right here. Drake drops a 3-song, 3-part music video, 3 different slaps. The second section of it, he's actually rapping hard with like some crazy like pattern and like barring out. First one I didn't really like too much. It was kind of like a club joint. And third one was kind of like a mixture of those two. It was kind of clubby, but he's still barring out. He's basically like shooting at everybody, not just directly at Kendrick. And like the big thing they said was like, hey, yo, Kendrick beats his bitch. And you're like, oh man, that's kind of crazy. Literally, me and Fuse are in the group chat talking, like breaking down the Drake shit. And then next thing you know, boom, Kendrick drops. I was up hella late this night, but Kendrick drops. And he dropped the most filthiest, disgusting, I hate your guts, break you down as a man and an individual diss track. I've probably, I don't know if I want to say ever heard, because I'm going to have to go in my Rolodex. I'm going to have to go in my bag. But
it's close.
Up there, right? Like, I can't think of very many diss tracks where like I heard it and I was just... And what was cool too is that he was barring out. He like, but he still was doing like his style. The you lied. Like I was just, ugh. Like it was just, it was gross, filthy. Like I thought the story of Adonis was a filthy, like, I hate your guts kind of diss track. But Kendrick upped it. And I was like, wow, you upped it on Pusha T. And that he's the most filthiest, like, I hate your guts kind of diss track maker. Like he's like, I'm gonna make sure that this like actually touches your spirit, that I don't fuck with you.
Bro, and it kind of reminded me of I See the Bitch in You.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Like, even that didn't feel as vicious because it was coming from Common. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was fair, but like this was Kendrick hates Drake. That was my biggest takeaway from this. Is like that man hates the, he hates Drake. He hates the concept of Drake. He hates everything Drake represents. Like, and that's what's crazy. It. So like,
let's go.
What won it for me and what swung it, because I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I think Kendrick slightly won this battle. I think Drake's records are going to age better than people. Like, Family Matters, especially. Family Matters, a bomb, dude. Like, that was, he killed ASAP Rocky.
Okay, hang on, wait. All right, ASAP. Like, I'm like, ASAP got it. Like, I left Family Matters. Like, yo, ASAP got his ass whooped by Drake. Just
like, it was crazy. What really swung it for? There are two things that really swung it for Kendrick with me. One, I think you're right, Vince. Tactically, like, Family Matters, if that marinates for a week, I think we're talking about, because Euphoria was a great track. Like, lyrically, I think that's arguably the best one out of all of this. Like, yeah. Euphoria, he really methodically broke him down. I think Kendrick's two big disses, or two best disses, were Euphoria and Not Like Us. And Not Like Us is the other big thing that swung it. Like, yo, you made an absolute banger, and you got a major assist from DJ Mustard on that. You made an absolute banger. It's already playing off. Like, it's in MLB stadiums. It's in USC's video. Like, the whole West Coast loves it. It's super, like, West Coast sounding. So you got, like, everybody that wants to rock with you. Like, you kind of stepped in Drake's arena there a little bit, where it's like, no, I'm making a hit. This is going to be catchy. I'm calling you some crazy stuff on it, which is the wildest part of this beef. Is it's like, yo, we're casually out here throwing domestic violence and pedophilia allegations around. Like, that's a new era of just craziness. But
that shit's hard. Like, that was pedophile. Let's get it. Like, man, that was hard. That, like, that's that diss track was so hard, bro. Like, that it's hard. Like, I would. Yeah, it's hard. Like, that's hard.
And that's what swung it for me. Like, that being catchy and just stepping on, like, Meet the Grams is wild, bro. Like, that's a wild, wild, dark, like, it reminded me of Kim, honestly, by Eminem, and like that thing where it's like, I'm not gonna listen to this ever again. Like, it was great. You all sorts of dissected him, but even still, the daughter thing is not true. I think that one loses steam a little bit, but that, by killing Family Matters essentially and being like, no, you know, because Drake, listen, he had the rollout for Family Matters. Like, he got the G-Unit piece. He went to the Chinese restaurant that Kendrick mentioned in Euphoria in Toronto and shot the video there. Like, this was extremely calculated, and it just got stepped on within 40 minutes. Like, that was the first time where it was like, that kind of shifted it. And then once you put Not Like Us out, you know, I don't know how, like, with Drake's, everyone's killing Drake's response on the Hard Part 6. And I'm just like, what do you say there, though? Like, how do you respond to that? Like, everyone was killing him before when he said, for not saying, oh, it's like, you deny having a daughter, but you don't deny being a pedophile. Mm-hmm. And then he denies being a pedophile, which, mind you, in a weird way, like, where the I'm too very famous to get arrested. It's like, all right, that's not the way to say it. Like, we got that.
Also, Kendrick years, never name dropped anybody, and he name dropped, like, Millie Bobby Brown. Like, it was weird. It was weird.
It was, well, no, but Ross was doing that too, though. I don't think that was as weird either when Ross was saying that, the whole beef and all these trolling videos. So, like, I do think Drake has tapped into the internet. Like, Drake's always had the internet. I think that's part of his lore. I think that Family Matters record wins 99% of beefs, except against Kendrick. Like, Kendrick is that 1%. Like, he is somebody that's on Drake. And maybe that's where Drake underestimated a little bit too, is like, Drake can big bro all these rappers. You can't really big bro Kendrick like that. Like, yeah, you took Kendrick on that tour back in the day, but like, Kendrick's got all sorts of number one records. People love him. His tours sell the same venues that your tours sell. Like, you just, you know, you can say you're objectively bigger than ASAP Rocky, than Rick Ross at this point, than Future, than all these other rappers. But Kendrick, you are, like, you're still Drake. You're the most commercially successful, but like, he's in your tier. Like, that big three thing was a reason with him and you and Cole. Like, that's the, and I mean, that's what said, oh, that's when you knew Kendrick wasn't playing either. We said, if the big three, it's just big me. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no playing there.
Let me say this though, like, a couple things. First off, if the stuff that Kendrick is saying about Drake is not true, because, dude, these are crazy allegations. You can't accuse someone of being a fucking PDF file downloader and have it not being true. Like, to me, that automatically he loses the entire beef if all the things you said is not true. Two, when you, the whole big three thing, bro, like, are we talking commercially or are we talking like pen to paper? Because commercially, none of them are on Drake's level.
I think it's both. I think it was both. I think it's the combination of they're commercially successful and they can actually make good music. Like J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar, and Drake all can rap for sure. They can are undeniably good rappers. They have all made good music. They've all been relevant in the commercial space. I agree with you. Drake is the most commercially successful of these rappers. Absolutely. Drake makes more pop music than J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar do at times. Like I love Drake. I think Drake can still bar a lot of people to death. I also recognize that like J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar are making like a Just Hold On, We're Going Home. That would sound insane. So there is a little more like that kind of.
I agree.
It's supposed to drop a Camila Cabello. Like, I know Kendrick's got a record with Taylor Swift and that Maroon 5 one that they mentioned too on the Drake record line, which I like too. I liked Push Ups when it came out. I still do. Just Kendrick's still the momentum, man. That matters. And it's like, and you're just seeing it now. Like, you look at all these charts, and I always hesitate with these numbers because of bots, because so many different things can be set up, but like, bro, those songs are everywhere. Like, Not Like Us is everywhere. Mm-hmm. That matters. Like, if that song gets played all summer long, it's May 8th right now. If that gets played all summer long, I agree. I want to see what happens with some of these allegations too. Because I'll tell you what, if there comes out concrete proof that Kendrick Lamar's beating his wife, then that Drake record is going to look a whole lot better. Like, It's going to look crazy. Like, that's why that Push record was so devastating. Like, besides the viciousness of it, in the sense of like, you know, Push said 40's going to die soon because he's got multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. That's wild, bro. Like, that's a wild line to say on record. Kendrick Lamar, though, said, Kendrick Lamar said, he hope Drake dies like three times. Like, and not just like, oh, I hope you die. Like, that's a.
I thought that was hard.
Yeah, that was fire, bro. I was like, wow, let's go. Like,
yeah, finally.
I was like, let's said it. You know, the reason why Meet the Grams is so hard and why it's honestly like, Not Like Us is my favorite, but also Meet the Grams is my favorite. And it's because Meet the Grams is a battle rap verse. Like, that's some shit. He could have said every single word of that with no beat on a fucking stage with Smack White, the God, and that shit would have went crazy. Like, Brooklyn would have been fucking wilding out. Like, he would have been passing out. Like, they would have been going nuts because it's just straight filthy directly attacking him. And, like, that's why Drake had no, like, real chance of like fully winning is because and Kendrick attacked this in multiple songs. It's like Drake understands what hip hop has been marketed as, but he doesn't understand what hip hop is. And he doesn't like feel it and exude it and like be a rapper. Even with like Family Matters, it would have been hard if he would have just dropped that shit off rip, like off like YouTube. Like, that's why Meet the Grams is hard too. It's like, wow, you did this whole rollout. You did a bunch of flips. You recorded for a bunch of shit. You paid off a bunch of people to be behind you in the video. Guess what? I got a hard ass song for that ass. Like, that matters. Like, you know, and that's, if I had to give a grade, I'm giving Kendrick a straight solid A. And I'm giving Drake a B+. Like, that's how I'm
B+.
That's how I'm giving it. And, you know, based on allegations, that can change. Those grades can flip. Those grades can be drastic, but as of right now, May 8th, I'm giving Kendrick one solid A, and I'm giving Drake a B+.
Yeah, I'm giving Kendrick an A too. Drake will see. I'm between A- and B+. Drake is always going to get credit for me in this, no matter what, because he rapped. Like, look, he got into the booth. He could have been said, I'm bigger than you. I'm a pop star. I don't got to do this. He got into the booth and rapped with the man who's been known as the boogeyman to this point. I do give credit for that. And I think everybody in Kendrick's camp gives credit for that too. I think, you know, it speaks for itself a little bit. Like, it is what it is. Both these guys, like Sherv said at the beginning of this, their careers aren't getting eliminated. They're both going to be massively successful. If anything, this is a cause. Kendrick Lamar is so motivated by his hatred of Drake. He's dropped more music than he has in the past week than he has in like the past 3 years. Like, I mean, good Lord. I will say the one thing, I'm still not letting Mr. Morale. I don't like that album.
It's a bad record, bro.
Everyone's trying to revisit that. I get it. Kendrick Lamar has one of the best four album runs you'll ever see with Section 80, Good Kid, Mad City, Pimp a Butterfly, and Damn. Those are all phenomenal, never leave the rotation type albums. We don't need to lie about Mr. Morale.
It's a bad album. Sure, for sure. What are your grades, man? How are you grading this thing?
I give Kendrick an A, but like, if the allegations aren't true, it quickly turns into like F get a life territory, because like they're like, what are you doing, dude? Like, there's no substance. Like, if the things he said about Drake aren't true, then like, what are we doing? This is just story time. Like, it's not real.
He still said the lies in a way that like was like he's still barring out. He's still barring out. The flow was still there. The cadence was still there. The timing was still there. Like,
Euphoria is crazy.
It's, like, I don't think such a good rap record, bro. It's like just the skill of rapping. Like, you, if all right, let's say that all the allegations, everything is like not true, I still would say the grades are the same, because like I'm judging it off of like, how did you rap in a rap battle? How did you rap in a rap battle? That's what I'm,
bro. It's easy to, I don't know, I'm not a rapper, you tell me, but I'm sure it's easier to rap about something. I'm sure it's harder to rap about something if it has to be true. If you can just make up any scenario the Crooked Eye does, then like you can rap about anything. Then like, who cares, bro? Like, I don't know. Like,
I'm not saying it doesn't hold any weight. I told a lie. The grades wouldn't be the same. I'm not, if the, let's say both allegations are false, I'm knocking both of them down like a letter grade. So then Kendrick goes to a B and then Drake goes to a C+. That's how I would do. That's all I'll say.
I don't want to be reactive. I don't want to be reactionary, but like, because we were alive during Jay-Z Nas. Granted, we were 10 and 11 years old. We were definitely even younger for the height of Tupac and Biggie, but like, This is for sure the best rap beef I've ever seen in our lifetime. Like, at least while we're adults.
It's definitely the best in the internet era, for sure. There's no internet era beef.
It's going to be tough to beat this. And just because of their stature, again, like, these are two, like, I was a believer in that Big Three thing. Like, I thought those three were on a different type of time, a different type of level. For them to step in the arena like this, like, it reminds me of the like three, the battle of three that Ali and Frazier had, where it was like Ali got two of them, Frazier got one. They put on a hell of an entertaining show for everybody. I mean, this also sucks because I don't think they're ever going to make music again post those allegations. Like, I've still been quietly like, yo, I love Poetic Justice. I love fucking Problems. Like, I want more records with these two, and I just don't think that's ever going to happen. Like, I think that bridge is firmly burned at this point. I think this is more 50 Ja than it is Jay-Z Nas, but like, you know, we'll see. Nobody's been physically harmed to this point. I don't know. The Drake stuff with his house, I think, you know, that's a whole different, I think that Toronto stuff with him in the weekend, I think that's...
That seems to be kind of escalating a little bit. Weekend him shit. Like,
yeah, Weekend's a crazy degenerate gambler. We should get him on the podcast.
Yo, we should, bro. Hey, yo, Weekend, what locks you got? Hey, can we do this before we wrap up? Hey, Fuse, yeah. I know that you're not like an active betting man, but like, throw some teams that you put money on, no matter who they playing or maybe current situations, just across the board. Don't got to be one specific sport. Just throw some teams that you would put some money on.
I feel like I should do baseball because like everybody else is in the playoffs right now. In terms of my NHL trust levels, big bounce back by Florida, by the way, tonight. They needed that in a big 6-1. Way.
6-1.
Yeah, impressive.
Worried. I've been saying Boston are frauds. Come see me. Come see me, Boston. Quit playing.
I'll tell you what, I keep saying the Rangers are going to like run out of steam eventually, but like, they look good, bro. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I think they're the real deal.
Yeah.
I think Dallas, too. I think Dallas is, they're going through. Look, you beat Vegas already. If you get through Colorado, then like, that's a hell of an impressive
run. You see what happened last night in their game? It was late, so I missed it, but.
No, I was just sleeping, getting ready to study for a final. No, I'd say
they were up. You want to tell them, big man? You tell them.
They're up 3-0, Fuse. And then you know
they
what?
Lose?
Yeah, you know what? They did lose. And guess who had the ass money line, boy? Bang! The star McKinnon. Boom! What are we talking about? And then at the end of 13, Miles Wood with the crazy long pass, just Dick Ottinger all the way down. No Diddy. But like, yo, like, it was filthy. And like, you know, this is the thing with the Dallas Stars, and it's a little bit of a pun on their name. Their stars don't show up in the postseason.
That's Jason Robertson's been missing, bro. Is he okay?
I can't find him. Rope hints. I don't know. I thought I had his personal number, but I keep texting him and the text bubbles went green. I think he blocked me. I don't know.
We'll see how they do this. They made the cup a few years ago, so like, I don't want to label them as like full chokers yet, but like, yeah, if they get to that point, like, we'll keep an eye on it. Like, blowing a 3-0 lead, that's big. It's Colorado. Like, Colorado's not the team you really kind of play with your food against.
Man, they had Gorgiev looking like Vasilevsky, boy. It was crazy.
They were up 3-0 in the first period. I was like, oh, this is over. And then I was like, oh.
Down this stretch. Like, you talk about the goalies, how they played. I flip flop. Ottinger was great. Goriev's terrible.
Yeah.
Baseball wise, teams I think are good this year. I think the Yankees are really good. Man, Soto has been a huge addition for them. And people were killing their offseason. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of Yankees fans were not amused at all with that offseason, and they've been really good so far. I mean, Texas coming off the World Series has been solid. Obviously, I saw you guys posted them as a play the other day. They scored like 10 runs in the first inning or something, so that was really helpful.
Yeah.
The Phils are rolling, bro. I don't want to keep like, I want to sound like a homer, but I can just really play great baseball right now. Really, really helping on that front.
They beat dog shit down our legs of the series. Like, we played them.
Yeah, 4-game sweep against the Dodgers. I mean, they're beating a lot of bad competition, but, like, they're killing them. Like, that's the thing is, it's like, look, it's hard to really knock it when you're just consistently beating them every game. We'll see what happens. Man, the Padres, I want to see how this Arias acquisition works out. Like, I don't know what the Marlins are doing besides just being the Marlins, I guess. But, like, trading Arias for prospects just makes absolutely zero sense at all. And good for San Diego for taking advantage of that. Like, that feels like a classic good team takes advantage of a bad team situation, and he just goes and cooks there in that lineup.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I gotta shout out the Orioles. What they do again today for your boy, win. I literally take them every day. Do they win every day? Of course not. It's sports. But they win most of the time, man. The Orioles, this team just does not give up. It does not quit, and they are never out. Shouts out to the Orioles. I got to give them so much love.
Yeah, they're up to something. I mean, Cherv talked about their pipeline earlier. Like, they have. They were bad for a few years, but they got a lot of young, you know, talent. They developed them the right way through their farm system. And, like, yeah, we saw it start to pay off this year, like, or last year. Like, this year, they're just creeping up on nobody. And so I think that's going to be the interesting to watch. But the AL East is just a good division, too. Like, you're always going to have, you know, Tampa and Boston and Toronto have all kind of been a little disappointing to start, but they're floating around 500. You know, the Yankees are great. Baltimore is great. So, like, you're always going to have a pretty tough race there. But, yeah, this Baltimore team is the real deal. Like, they have the foundation to be good for quite a while as long as they just do things right. Like, it's all about those moves around the edges.
Yep, I agree, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. Dude, Kachuk and Pasta threw the gloves down and got into a fist fight.
I saw that.
That's crazy.
Kind of fucked them up.
That's crazy.
I've been on Pasta's neck, too. He just fucking beat Kachuk down. Or Kachuk down, bro. It was just, oof.
Yeah.
Right, hey, catch the one, though. Let's go. Let's get it.
Yeah. Cool, bro. I get that.
Yeah. All right, man.
All right, man. Well, shit. Hey, if you made it to this point, congratulations. We went hard today. Thank you, Fuse, once again. Driving Dish Podcast, the premier NBA podcast. It's on every single platform you can think of. Apple Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it, they there. They also have a YouTube channel. Him and Justin are great. They do the whole gridiron thing, and they never, ever miss. They try to get the highest one, and they get it a lot of times. So, yeah, shouts out to y'all if you made it. And, we'd be back, right?
Yes, sir. Rayfuse, awesome having you, bro. You made it through your first Buy the Dip experience, bro. I hope we can see you back on here.
Yeah, no, we're here. Listen, we didn't get too degenerate tonight. It was all right. We'll figure it back.
I have the
Henny. I don't have the figure of glass of Henny next to me. I only got one. The figurative glass is there.
Yes, sir.
Big time.
All right, y'all. Peace.
Peace.